Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In 2015 and 2016, the neonatal unit at the Countess of Chester Hospital in England experienced a shocking surge in infant mortality rates.
As authorities work to uncover the cause of the tragedy, nurse Lucy Letby came under suspicion. Arrested 3 times over a period of 2 years, Letby now stands trial, accused of 8 murders and 10 attempted murders of babies under her care.
With allegations ranging from injecting air into babies' veins to using insulin to end their lives, the case has captivated the nation and sparked a fierce debate over medical malpractice and the duty of care owed to vulnerable patients.
Hear the full story on our new podcast, Nurse of Death, available wherever you get podcasts.
Search and press subscribe so you don't miss any of the chilling details in this shocking story. Search Nurse of Death right now and press subscribe where you get podcasts. Hey, everybody, quick episode note. This interview that we did with Scott Roeder of Evidence Room was recorded yesterday afternoon, right before the information came out that SLED is going to be considering Stephen Smith's death a homicide. So some of the tenses that we talk about is, what will they rule? When will they rule? Literally happened right before that ruling came out. Nonetheless, great interview. I hope you enjoy.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
We are still talking with Scott Roeder of Evidence Room. We're discussing the death of Stephen Smith. And we're not going down the road of blaming individuals here. We're talking more so about, how do you get on a path that can lead you to actual suspects in the case, not just rumors, speculation, and morbid hopes that the darkness that surrounds Alec Murdaugh extends deeper into his family? Does it? I don't know. Nobody does. Except the person who actually committed this crime. And how do we get there? The body is being exhumed and the investigation then likely to pick back up with hopefully a little bit more steam. What can we find, though? I don't think it's going to be hard to look at the second autopsy once the body is exhumed and to be able to very clearly state that this was no hit and run. That being said, how do you begin to piece evidence together as to who may be responsible for this hit and run or this murder that would have happened now roughly 8 years ago?
Right. Well, I think like the first thing that I would need is to establish that there's more evidence than not to say that it is a car accident of some kind. Mm-hmm. Now, if there's not enough evidence to have a reasonable suspicion that it's a car accident, i.e. photographs of car debris, on the ground, on the body, witness statements of the appearance of the body, photographs and so on and so forth that should have been taken. And if it wasn't taken, that's an error by omission. And you can construe those facts in the light most favorable of the party moving for legal action. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, if it's not considered to be enough evidence to be a car accident, then it's an open investigation. Then it's a homicide. And now you must open up a homicide investigation. And that's the way it would have to go, you know?
And that's something where you start to wonder, okay, I mean, the chances of there being any sort of DNA evidence and all of that, probably not necessarily there anymore. I would think one of the bigger things to look at would be a digital footprint. And that's what I wonder about. And maybe you can answer this because we're talking 2015. Obviously, we still had plenty of technology in 2015. We weren't up to iPhone 14 yet. but we still had iPhones. We had other devices. It wasn't ancient times. How far back can one dig into that sort of digital footprint? Because I would imagine if they were to be able to look at Stephen's phone, Stephen's emails, Stephen's texts, all those sort of records to see who he's communicating with and when, that would likely produce some sort of leads. And from there, going and talking or subpoenaing or getting a warrant for other digital devices or information from those that could be considered a suspect to see what also was being communicated there. Again, 8 years ago, we're having to go back in time. Is that information available? Is that on a cloud somewhere within the companies, then the cell phones providers or Gmail or wherever they may have had accounts in a cloud, or is
not.
That difficult to get that far back?
When you're talking that far back, there's an actual phenomenon going on right now, because I think we're at a point of convergence from a technological standpoint, where we have more input of data going into these clouds and so forth, and the internet and so forth, then we have space to house it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a technique that's a basic technique. It's called shelving, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the newest data gets the top shelf, and then based on how much shelving you have, the lowest stuff gets pushed off. I would say we're right on that borderline of maximum capacity on cell phones going back to 2014. Updates and new phones, everybody gets a new phone every year or two or whatever it is. I think it's going to be tough to find a good, solid digital footprint that can be made sense of with upgrades and so on. I mean, I know I made an independent documentary film back in 2013 for a film festival. I've been wanting to edit it ever since. I saved it to an iCloud server back in 2013. I had access to it up until about 2017. Now I can't recover it to save my life, and I'm pretty good with computers. So that's something just a couple years earlier that's gone. I think the best evidence here is going to be the appearance of the wound. Now, let's say there's not enough evidence to say it's a car accident.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're looking at, okay, now it's a murder or it's an unknown. Then we look at that wound to the head. And if that wound to the head is a standalone wound to the head, there's no other injuries skeletal-wise to the body, no other breaks of bones, which you would expect, especially lower body, which you can tell this long, you'll still be able to see the broken bones, would be, what is the appearance of the head wound? Then you start looking at, well, what could make that? Is this made by a hammer? Is this made by a brick? Is this made by something else? Because wound fractures, and I do these experiments where, you know, we have gel mannequin skulls that have brains inside of them and, simulation blood and so forth. And then we can strike them with an object and see the impression it leaves on that. So we know how a bat breaks a skull. We know how a hammer breaks a skull. We know how a brick breaks a skull, because we've done that, or we can do that, or we can do experiments to find out what most likely would cause that head injury. So there's a lot of things you can do. You just have to be motivated to do it. And you can get that done on the private sector. Like I'll do that for my clients, but to get a city coroner or a county coroner to go through that expense on a case like that, I would find it hard pressed for them to do that.
Sure.
But on the private sector, you can get that done.
And you can get these things done. And I imagine we're going to find a lot of interesting information about Stephen's body through this. But again, I keep going back to, how do you trace this back to the actual perpetrator? If the digital footprint's gone, if the DNA footprint is gone, would we strictly be relying on witness testimony, on someone coming out and saying, look, so-and-so told me, if we're talking about the police or the coroner, so-and-so said, and pressured me to make it this way or that way, or would be talking about other people coming forward and saying, so-and-so had an issue with Stephen at the time, or there was something going on and it was with this person, and maybe you should look more into that and investigate there. I mean, I'm very troubled and curious to understand how we dig back to find any sort of real irrefutable evidence to convict someone this far in when there was such little evidence gathering done at the time, how quickly it was dismissed. And now are we too far gone from actually finding?
Well, maybe not. Like I'll give you an example. Let's say it turns out that the injury to the back of the head is from a hammer. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go about the business of, okay, did anybody buy a hammer in 2015? You go to the local stores.
Mm-hmm.
Who has a hammer? You know, does anybody, you get a search warrant for people's houses. What kind of hammers do they have?
Yeah.
It's made from a hammer, from a set of hammers that this guy's got in his garage. And he's got the one hammer missing out of his set that matches this. It's just an example. But, you know, if you get one lead, that could ripple to an unknown area of investigation. But we need to know what is that one lead. And I think that the autopsy is the best evidence. And I think before we get the cart before the horse, is it must be determined, is the evidence more consistent with an automobile accident or not? And then once you make that determination, then we can start the investigation of, well, what's the not part? But I don't think we have enough information to kind of formulate a plan until we know the totality of the injuries of this kid. And then I think you would have to look into this particular kid's digital footprint by help of his family, by help of this kid's friends, to see what was going on in his life at that time. Why would he be the victim of a crime? Who would want to hurt him? Who were his enemies? Who disapproved of his friendships with certain people? Where did he spend his free time? Who were his friends? Who were his enemies? And I think that's where you start the investigation. If the injury doesn't look like a car accident, then you look at his life and see, okay, what was going on in his life at that time? And that's where you start.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
That it is. Love to get your thoughts on this case. You can weigh in by calling toll free 888-554-5537. That's 888-5-KILLER. Get your thoughts on the air about this or any of the cases that we're following for you. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you are downloading podcasts. You don't miss any of the discussions or breaking updates that we have for you on these stories. My name's Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.